Good afternoon. My name is Adrian Dix. I'm BC's Minister of Health. I'm joined today from Vancouver by Dr. Rekha Gustafson, who's the Deputy Provincial Health Officer and, of course, the head of the BC Centre for Disease Control. I'm honoured to be here on the territories of the Lekwungen-speaking people, the Songhees and the Esquimalt First Nations. Dr. Gustafson is on the territory of the Musqueam of the Squamish of the Tsleil-Waututh First Nations in Vancouver, and we're both honoured to be on their territories today, respectively. Tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we'll be providing written updates on the COVID-19 pandemic in British Columbia around 3 o'clock on Thursday. I'll be joined again, as usual, by Dr. Bonnie Henry, who will be providing an update on modeling and on the state of the pandemic in British Columbia at that time. That's on Thursday afternoon. We're doing it this way for the first time. Dr. Gustafson is in Vancouver, and I'm here, so there will undoubtedly be moments when we talk over each other. I just want you all to know that those will all be my fault. And with that, it's my honor to introduce, it really is, someone who's really contributed immensely to British Columbia in the last 18 months. It's my honor to introduce Dr. Rekha Gustafson.
Thank you very much, Minister Dix, and good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be back with you again today. I would like to start today with an update on the progress of COVID-19 immunization in British Columbia. As of today, 74% of adults, so people over 18 years of age, have received their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine, and 72% of all eligible British Columbians, so everyone over 12, has received their first dose of vaccine. This includes 39% of youth, 12 to 17, who have received a single dose of COVID-19 vaccine. As of today, again, 3,635,795 doses of all one of the three COVID-19 vaccines have been administered to people in British Columbia. Of these, 314,246 are second doses. Today, people who received an AstraZeneca vaccine as their first dose will start to receive invitations for their second dose of that vaccine. As you know, the period between doses has been shortened to 8 weeks, which means that many people will be able to book their second dose earlier than originally anticipated. British Columbians are doing very well with immunization against COVID-19, and the results are very encouraging. We are now at step one of the restart plan, and we're continuing to follow important indicators of the effect of COVID-19 on our communities. So what are those indicators telling us? Over the weekend, 481 individuals in BC were diagnosed with COVID-19, 218 from June 4th to the 5th, 131 from the 5th to the 6th, and 133 from the 6th to today. By health authority, that's 70 diagnoses in Vancouver Coastal Health, 285 in Fraser Health, 9 on Vancouver Island, 101 in Interior Health, and 15 in Northern Health over the 3 days of the weekend. We now have had 141,663 British Columbians ever diagnosed with COVID-19. At the moment, 2,102 of those individuals are considered to be active cases. As of today, there are 199 people still remaining in hospital. 63 of those are in critical care, and 38 are requiring mechanical ventilation today. Everyone else has recovered. Sadly, 12 people have died as a result of COVID-19 over the past 3 days. My condolences to all those who have lost loved ones. Since the last report, two new outbreaks were declared, one at Kelowna General Hospital in Interior Health and one at Glenwood Seniors Community in Fraser Health. The outbreak at Sunrise Poultry has been declared over since our last report. These negative outcomes, these losses, are an important reminder of what we have to gain. For the past 16 months, all of us, public health teams, frontline workers, frontline healthcare workers, and all of you have been thinking about preventing negative outcomes, preventing losses. We've been focused on preventing serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths. Orders and restrictions are part of our daily lives. But now, we are in a much better position as a province, and we can start to focus on all there is to be gained through immunization. And there's so much. If we keep going, we can get back to the things that sustain us, back to our communities, back to work, back to the meaningful relationships in our lives. And as we move forward, our public health monitoring and management will also change, and I'd like to share some of those details with you so that we can gain a shared understanding of what those changes are and why they're happening. As cases continue to decline, daily fluctuations, especially in cases, will be less and less meaningful. Rather, seven-day averages and long-term trends are going to be better indicators of our progress. From a public health perspective, as long as we continue on this trajectory, we will be aiming to shift our approach from pandemic emergency response to a sustainable public health management. This approach is actually similar to how we prevent and control other communicable diseases. In BC, strong local public health teams of public health nurses, environmental health officers under the leadership of medical health officers, monitor, prevent, and control communicable diseases every day. Indeed, normally they do it so well that we rarely hear about them in the news. What we can look forward to in an immunized population is that COVID-19 will become one of these communicable diseases, the one that is a disease that is effectively and expertly managed by public health and the healthcare system. It also means public health teams can return to some of the other equally important work that keep us well, to prevent overdoses, to prevent injuries, and to reduce health inequities in our population. We are on a good path to get back to work, to school, to university, to seeing friends, to traveling, resuming those connections that are so important to all of us. But to get there, please register and ensure you are fully vaccinated so we can all put this pandemic behind us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Gustafson, and I want to start by passing on my condolences to the 12 people who passed away over the last 3 days, 9 from Friday to Saturday, 1 from Saturday to Sunday, 2 from Sunday to Monday in British Columbia related to the COVID-19 pandemic, 8 lived in Fraser Health, 4 in Vancouver Coastal Health. And these are difficult times, especially now, especially through 18 months of the pandemic, I think, for people to lose loved ones as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Their remark, I think their message about the force of the pandemic and the force of this virus on many people still in our province and the need for us to continue to take actions to stop the spread of COVID-19. But mostly, it's a moment of grief for the families, for the friends, for the caregivers, and I want them all to know that we are with them today in what is a very, very difficult moment. Obviously, the overall news on vaccination continues to be good. We had a very strong weekend of vaccination, I think on or around 146,000 doses over the last 3 days, including the weekend days. Significant number of those now, of course, are second doses. Just say that in terms of first doses, that over 70, about 88% of people have received their first dose. Over 65, 86%, over 60, 85%, over 50, 82%. For the first time of all of those people over 40, which is a huge group in British Columbia, 80% now have received their first dose of immunization, and 77% over 30. Of course, over 18, all adults, it's 74%, and all those eligible over 12, it's 72%, 121,058 people. Children and youth between 12 and 17 have received their first dose immunization in the relatively short period of time in which those doses have been open to them, a sign, I think, of the determination, especially of young people, to get vaccinated. That's something we want to, of course, continue to encourage. With respect to hospitalizations and critical care, we see that the number of people in hospital is now under 200 at 199. At its height of the third wave, that was 511. The number of people in critical care up slightly over the weekend to 63. That's down from 183 at the height of the pandemic. As Dr. Gustafson has said, however, it has this reduction in the number of COVID-19 cases in hospital doesn't mean that the healthcare system isn't incredibly active. In fact, if you look 2 weeks ago, we have fewer vacant base beds in our healthcare system today than we had a couple of weeks ago. I noted to you on Thursday that that June the 2nd was the highest day of ambulance calls in the history of the BC ambulance system, other than New Year's Eve 2017 to New Year's Day 2017 and 2018. In other words, the healthcare system is incredibly active. That we had 2 weeks ago 672 vacant base beds, and today we have 619 vacant base beds as overall COVID-19 hospitalizations have declined. So people are doing and continuing to do extraordinary work in our healthcare system. And as our society comes back to normal, we may well see more of the events that lead people into emergency rooms in our province. Through the weekend, we saw some of that and on some news programming and print print reporting. We've seen images of Surrey Memorial Hospital and doctors, nurses, and other specialists, caregivers, and support staff tired, worried, and concerned that there were still many COVID patients in their ICU. For the past several months, and the past few weeks especially, our message to register, book, and get vaccinated has been relentless. You've heard it everywhere, and it's been shared by community leaders across BC. And we've done this because COVID is relentless. Since COVID became a household word, we've seen the nightmare that is global pandemic. We've seen the show of COVID's resilience in each jurisdiction's fight to stop the spread, the illness, the death, the sacrifice, the profound loss. We've seen how we adapt, and with a virus that lives to spread and spreads to live, we've seen how it adapts too, through variants and the worrisome variants of concern. With each wave, we've seen efforts to get back what we can of what we've lost, to reconnect, renew, and resume our lives. And with the launch of BC's Restart Plan 2 weeks ago, we're doing that again. In BC, across Canada and around the world, that is our very human nature, to start again, to rebuild, and to move forward. But our duty to stop the spread has not ended. COVID-19 has sent us no message of surrender. We know it's essential that we register, book, and get our shot, to do it now, and keep with it as we're directed to do what's next. And we do that knowing, never forgetting, that the vaccines are highly effective, but not 100% effective. So we must register, book, and take our first and second doses, then still use our COVID skills, still follow the guidance we've been given, and still adhere to the orders that help manage the risk that exists in the gap between highly effective and 100%. We need to continue to work together. I'm so proud of so many communities that have significantly increased their immunization and registration in recent weeks. And we got to keep working there. Communities such as Richmond, such as Rutland, such as Fort St. John, that are seeing their immunization rates rise. And we've got to continue to do that in the coming weeks. It is a very, very positive situation. Aujourd'hui, nous faisons le point sur le nombre de nouveaux cas pour trois périodes de référence de 24 heures chacune, soit celle du 4 et 5 juin, celle du 5 et 6 juin et celle du 6 jusqu'au 7 juin en mi-journée. Il y a eu 12 nouveaux décès liés au COVID-19 durant ces trois périodes de référence. Nous offrons nos condoléances aux familles et aux amis de ces personnes et à tous ceux qui ont perdu des êtres chers au cours de cette pandémie. Pour la première période de référence, nous avons eu 217 nouveaux cas. Pour la deuxième période de référence, nous avons eu 131 nouveaux cas. Au cours des dernières 24 heures, 133 nouveaux cas se sont ajoutés. Parmi l'ensemble des cas confirmés de COVID-19, 199 personnes sont actuellement hospitalisées, dont 63 en soins intensifs. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. We're happy to take your questions.
A reminder to reporters on the line.
Reminder to reporters on the line. Please press star 1 to enter the queue. You are limited to one question and one follow-up. First, we go to Marcella Bernardo, News 1130.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions. I'm not sure who can answer this, but I'm hoping that Dr. Gustafson might be able to give us some insight into what's being done to try to keep track of all of this, because Washington State vaccinations are lagging behind D.C. right now, and there are many people in Washington State that are refusing to get vaccinated. So how concerned are you about the border possibly opening up too soon and more people from Washington State who may not be vaccinated trying to visit British Columbia?
Thank you for your question. The single most important way we can protect ourselves is to ensure that we ourselves, we as a community, are immune. Throughout throughout the world and throughout the pandemic, and once the pandemic is declared over, there will be reintroductions of COVID-19 to British Columbia. And of course, the likelihood of reintroductions is higher when the population from where people are coming is less immunized. However, we actually have the means of preventing an introduction of an infection into turning into a local outbreak by getting ourselves immunized. We certainly hope that jurisdictions around us will continue to make efforts to immunize their population both near and far. We need to make sure that vaccines are available to every country around the globe. But in terms of the impact of immunization rates from other parts of the world on us, the single most important thing we can do and the single most effective thing we can do is making sure that we have high rates of immunization here in British Columbia, and Minister Dix may have something to add to that.
Just to say this, I think agree with what Dr. Gustafson has said, of course, and just to say that it's our expectation in the coming months that the federal government may take some actions in concert with the U.S. government and with other governments to increase access to Canada. I think in the coming months, given what's happening to test positivity in our province, which today was 3.51%, and what's happening to test positivity in other jurisdictions, that is inevitable. But that will require a whole series of measures to ensure that we stay safe, and I'm sure that those are measures and something we're in regular contact with the federal government, that in advance of all that, the federal government is working on. I know this is something that will be the subject of the Premier's discussions with the Prime Minister, his discussions by Dr. Henry and Dr. Gustafson with their colleagues in other provinces. So it may be in the coming months that a loosening of restrictions at the border, and that will be decided, obviously, and is decided at the federal level. But what's important for everyone is that when that happens, steps be taken to ensure that we stay safe, and it would be my expectation that the federal government will do that.
Marcella, do you have a follow-up?
I do, and it is for Minister Dix in reference to what he just talked about, is that what incentives are we putting in place for British Columbians to get vaccinated? Because over the weekend, I heard from a number of people who are still scared to get vaccinated for some bizarre reason, not trusting it. And so I guess what more can we as a province do to try to encourage those that are reluctant, including people who may be healthcare workers in the system, refusing to get vaccinated?
Well, I think, just to put that in context, we've had in long-term care 41,449 long-term care staff, 27,000 received their first dose, 27,694, and obviously growing every day, getting their second dose. In terms of residents, that's 33,060 long-term care residents, and 28,458 of those have received their second dose. If you look across the province and you see, particularly amongst young people, what's been impressive is young people registering and young people getting their doses of COVID-19 that we've seen in the last number of days. It's not so long ago that the federal government and Health Canada made the decision and was supported by the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, and one we supported in BC, to give access to children and youth 12 to 17, 121,058 have already been vaccinated. So we've got to continue to push to make it easier for people to get vaccinated. That's why BC CDC nurses working with Dr. Gustafson in Fort St. John today, working with the community there to raise levels of vaccination, because I think people in Fort St. John do want to be vaccinated. Why we had a clinic at Rutland High School last week and in a Rutland Community Hall to increase immunization there. Why we've seen significant advancement in immunization in Richmond. I think that, as you noted in your first question, Marcella, that there is an enormous desire for people to get vaccinated in their province. I hear from people every day who want to get vaccinated more quickly. 74% of adults have already been vaccinated in their first dose, and we are going to be, we're expecting similar response on second doses. So I think we're doing well. We've got to continue to make it easier for people to get vaccinated. and continue to push towards the ultimate goal, which is as close to 100% as we can get. But we haven't stopped seeing an increase in first doses. And I note that even though there are a lot of second doses this weekend, the majority of doses this weekend, of over the 3 days of the, I think between 140 and 150,000 doses that we saw over the 3 days, a majority of those are still first doses. So that number keeps going up, and we got to continue to work. And the advantage we have is because we're giving second doses, our vaccination centers will be open province-wide consistently from here through the summer, so people will have an opportunity to consider it. If people are dead against being vaccinated, of course that will have an impact. But a lot of people, we've got to make it as easy as possible for people to get vaccinated, and there will be other advantages. We'll see that in terms of travel and other things in the future that will be further incentives for people to get vaccinated. I don't think people need to get gifts to get vaccinated. Getting vaccinated is a gift.
Next question, Shannon Patterson, CTV.
Oh, hi, Minister and Dr. Gustafson. I think this question is for the doctor. Pharmacies are being sent thousands and thousands of doses of AstraZeneca for second shots, but the reality is a good portion of their patients will likely opt for Pfizer instead. So what will happen to the leftover AstraZeneca vaccine that pharmacies don't administer? Is there any plan so it doesn't end up going unused?
So thank you for the question. In terms of the vaccine management, what we would do with leftover vaccination, actually, or vaccines, I'm not really sure what the plans for them would be, but I would say that the vaccine supplies are actually being managed quite carefully, and there's good planning in place to make sure that the supply and the demand are well matched. And we do know that lots of people who received AstraZeneca vaccine would like and are ready to receive their second dose of AstraZeneca vaccine. It is a highly effective vaccine. People have had good experiences with the vaccine, and they know that there's good data showing that two dose of AstraZeneca vaccine provides good protection. There's good and the best data on effectiveness with AstraZeneca is really coming from the two dose schedule. There are some people who may choose to get an mRNA vaccine as a second dose, and that is absolutely something that's going to be available to them in British Columbia. But I would say that at the moment, our understanding and the indications are that there is good demand for that and a desire to receive the second dose AstraZeneca vaccine. At the same time, our vaccine management programs in British Columbia are watching those things very, very carefully, from surveys, from the number of people who are booking their appointments, because your question is important. This is a global pandemic, and it is our duty to make sure that we minimize any vaccine wastage, because every single dose in somebody's arm is protecting that individual and the rest of us. And so I think it's a very important consideration and is being watched very carefully.
Shannon, do you have a follow-up? Yeah, can you guys let us know what percentage of people who are testing positive for COVID now are unvaccinated? And would you call those infections likely preventable had those people gotten the vaccine?
So I don't have that particular percentage at the top of my head, so I'm going to have to get back to you with that number. But we do know that a proportion of people who are going to test positive for COVID-19 will have been vaccinated in the past. It's a small proportion or a smaller proportion of people. But with a vaccine that's not 100% effective, as more and more people get immunized, that proportion becomes higher, but the absolute number in a population that is protected is going to be reduced. So we do know it's not potentially preventable? Well, we know that there, with a vaccine that's not 100% effective but highly effective, there will be cases in people who are immunized, and other than with the other layers of protection that we have, and we do have other layers of protection available to us, they aren't necessarily preventable. Of course, one other way that vaccine or infections that occur among people who have one dose of vaccine is preventable is to get that second dose of vaccine. We know that increases the degree of protection and the length of protection. So these infections will occur, but we do expect them to be less severe and less likely to transmit onto others. So really this is why vaccination is both an individual and a population level protection. We provided, vaccines provide a degree of individual protection, and overall in the population, it will reduce transmission, which means that if an individual didn't get perfect protection from the vaccine, the likelihood of them being exposed over time will go down substantially. And Minister Dix has some follow-up comments on that.
Really simple. Last week, I think I was just trying to add up the days. I remember in my mind about 370,000 doses of vaccine were put in people's arms in BC, 370,000 over 7 days, around that number, which is more than the vaccine we receive. Really, the only limitation on the amount of vaccine we deliver is the amount that comes to us each week, and we carefully match one to the other. This is the largest immunization campaign the province has ever seen, program the province has ever seen. There's obviously enormous scrutiny. I think the enthusiasm on the ground to deliver the vaccine and the careful matching of the vaccine we get with delivering it as soon as possible reflects your concern, John. We want to get it in people's arms as, virtually the moment it arrives.
Next question, Richard Zussman, Global News.
Dr. Gustafson, as you noted, British Columbians that received AstraZeneca are starting to be able to book their second shots today. Some are being told they have, you know, somewhere between 12 and 18 hours to make a decision about whether they're going to get AstraZeneca as a second choice. I'm hearing from a lot of people different reasons for why they are still concerned. Will the province provide any additional guidance to people to help make their decisions for whether they should receive AstraZeneca as their second dose or if they should go with the mRNA vaccine?
So, yes, thank you for your question. Yes, there is information available to people, and that information is quite detailed. It's detailed on the effectiveness of the vaccine. It's also detailed, provides detail on the risk of the blood clots that some people are concerned about, both after the first dose and after the second dose. Data from the United Kingdom indicates that after the second dose, the risk of that blood clot is about one in 600,000, as well as the evidence that we have for effectiveness of the mix and match schedule. We know that we now have studies that tell us that it's a safe thing to do, that you may get some more local reactions, and that the second dose of that mRNA vaccine does provide a booster reaction. And that booster reaction is important. That's what we're looking for in a second dose of vaccine. So in the information provided to patients, all of those details are provided for them so that they can make an informed choice.
Richard, do you have a follow-up?
One of the things people are grappling with as well is the timing. So, Dr. Gustafson, will the province provide details to people on when they will receive their second dose? For example, if they received AstraZeneca on April 15th as a first dose, they will receive AstraZeneca on this day as a first dose, and they will receive an mRNA on this day as a second dose. Like, can the province provide this detail to people so they can understand when they may be able to be immunized with either one of the types of vaccines?
So I would say that with the largest immunization campaign that we have ever run in British Columbia, that kind of precision is unlikely to be available to people. We are informing people about when groups of individuals will be invited for a second dose of vaccination, as well as general parameters about when groups of individuals are going to be able to receive their vaccine, and of course, it all depends on vaccine supplies, which are being managed in British Columbia, in Canada, and throughout the globe in real time. So that level of precision, while not available, I think what we can assure people of is that, again, as soon as vaccines arrive, groups of people will be receiving their invitation. And I'm actually really glad to hear that people are anxious to receive that second vaccine, and there are no delays, certainly implemented or intentional delays for anyone. Our goals are the same. We hope to deliver the vaccine to people as fast as possible, and people are hoping to receive it as fast as possible. And I think Minister Dix has something to add to that.
Just the priority for second doses, as you know, Richard, is the same as for first doses, and we've seen that. people living in long-term care, assisted living, and other congregate settings had high priority for first doses, and many of them now, the majority, have had their second doses already. Other healthcare workers as well, and then those that are clinically vulnerable, who started receiving, were able to book for their appointments on March 29th. Many of those have now booked their second doses. I believe in those categories are elders and those who are clinically vulnerable. There was, I think, in the days when we opened up more fully for second doses, about 450,000 invitations sent out at that time. And so the invitations will be sent out on a regular basis, and then people will book their appointments as they did for the first doses.
Next question, Brishti Basu, Capital Daily.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my question. Last week, Dr. Henry mentioned that there's been an outbreak of the Delta variant in a care home in BC, as well as some other clusters. Can you provide some more information about where those clusters and that outbreak is located and how many people have been affected?
So the specific Delta variant in British Columbia, as to where the clusters were exactly, that's not information that I have for you, but I can give you some information about the Delta variant. We are able to monitor all variants in British Columbia. We do whole genome sequencing on every single sequence, and the Delta variant is still relatively uncommon in British Columbia. We've had just over 500 cases identified to date of the Delta variant, and of course, at this point, every single case of COVID-19 is a variant, because that's what the virus does. The virus varies, and variants that are a bit more transmissible have a bit of an evolutionary advantage and become more common. Again, in British Columbia, the Delta variant is still relatively uncommon, but we will continue to monitor it in British Columbia as we do elsewhere around the world.
Next, do you have a follow-up? Sorry, Brishti.
Yes, I do. Thank you. We see in the latest June 3rd report from the BC CDC that most of the Delta variant cases so far in BC have been the 0.2 sublineage, but the earlier reports don't break down the data by each of the three sublineages. And given that we know that the 0.2 is the more of concern lineage, do you have any information on how long this particular variant has been circulating in BC?
So you're asking interesting questions today about precise date. Again, the Delta variant, so this variant is still very relatively low in British Columbia. I'm more than happy to go back to our variant graph and look at exactly when it appeared. The distinction between the two variants, the Delta variant and the Kappa variant, is relatively recent. One of those variants has remained a variant of concern. The other one has been downgraded to variant of interest. And sort of the exact appearance of that variant in British Columbia compared to when it was classified as a different variant is something that we can definitely follow up in our statement with. But again, it's still a relatively uncommon variant in British Columbia, has had an increase in the rate over the last several weeks, and we will continue to monitor it.
Next question, Moira Whiten, the Tyee.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my question. Going back to second doses for people who received AstraZeneca on the first dose, do you expect people if people select AstraZeneca for their second dose to receive it faster than they would if they select mRNA? And what is the reason, if you could just explain to the average person making this choice, what is the reason for giving the option of that mRNA second shot when NACI has said that it's always preferable to have two of the same vaccine?
So thank you for your question. So with respect to when you will receive your vaccine, again, it depends on when your turn comes up as a second dose based on your age. And again, AstraZeneca vaccine recipients have started receiving their vaccine or their invitations for that AstraZeneca vaccine. With respect to the AstraZeneca vaccine, I think it is important that patients have the opportunity to consider all of the factors that go into that decision. And one of the important things about AstraZeneca vaccine and having the same vaccine is that first of all, we know that generally we prefer for people to have the same vaccine of the same dose. However, we also know that that there are some people who are concerned about that risk of blood clots that is very low, but at the same time, that is a concern for some individuals, and we certainly wouldn't want anyone not to get a second dose of vaccine because of that concern, so that option is provided to them. But we also know that the most robust studies about effectiveness come from two doses of the same vaccine. So we are all going through this pandemic together. We're watching the data come out, and we provide the fullest information for individuals. And I think given those different factors, actually either choice is a reasonable one for an individual to take. As long as they receive that second dose, either choice is reasonable. We are providing all the information we can for individuals to make health choices for themselves. The most important thing is to get that second dose.
Moira, do you have a follow-up?
I do, thank you. In terms of that, making that choice, is there a situation under which you would recommend someone who had received a first dose of AstraZeneca to receive mRNA, such as for people with increased risk factors of VIIT? And with you mentioned previously the rate of blood clots for second doses. Is there any reason to assume that it is higher for second doses than it would have been for a first dose?
So, interesting question and important question. There are actually no particularly well-identified risk factors for this rare side effect, and therefore there isn't a risk factor that would make us not recommend someone to receive a second dose of AstraZeneca. But the only reason we would not recommend a second dose is if somebody actually did develop this rare outcome, in which case we would not recommend a second dose, or if they had another serious side effect of any vaccine, such as a serious allergic reaction, then we would not recommend that they receive that same vaccine. Both of those are very, very rare outcomes. And no, there are no other risk factors which would indicate for us that or cause us to recommend someone not to receive a second dose of AstraZeneca.
Next question, Rob Buffum, CTV Vancouver Island.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my question. I guess my first question is, we're 8 days away from stage two or step two at the earliest, June 15th. I'm wondering, do you have any concerns, or are we on track for people being able to host a barbecue with 50 people in their backyard, or folks coming from the Lower Mainland to Tofino?
Well, at the moment, when we look at what were the criteria that were established for being able to move to the next stage, we are on track. Our first dose immunization rates are high. As we mentioned, 74% of those over 18, 72% of those over 12. And the important indicators of what's actually happening with COVID-19 in our community. So the indicators that tell us not only what proportion of people are immunized, but that the immunization is having the effect we want it to have. So which is that cases are declining, hospitalizations are declining, critical care admissions are declining, and mortality has remained low and stable throughout this third wave of the pandemic. So all of the indicators are in the direction that we want them to be. So this is very, very encouraging. And then, of course, the additional information that is provided by being able to monitor it for another week gives us that additional assurance. But of course, that's a decision that's made by government. It's made by government on the advice of the provincial health officer. But at the moment, the indicators that we have put in place to monitor and to make the decision on are all going in the right direction.
Rob, did you have a follow-up?
I do, thanks. And I'm not sure if this is better suited for Minister Dix or the doctor, but I'm wondering about, I've heard a reference today to the borders opening in the coming months. And I'm just wondering, I know it's a federal government decision in their jurisdiction, but obviously the public health have they'll lobby for what they think's right and safe. What is your best guess as to when the border will open, or educated guess, I should say? Do you think it will be the month of August? Do you think it will be September? Can you give us some insight as to when you think it should open? And if there's any metrics as in terms of vaccination counts here you'd like to see before you encourage that?
Yeah, educated guesses about my future educated guesses, I guess, Rob. I think fundamentally we have to continue to do what we've been doing, which is to reduce transmission, follow public health guidance. Oh. Sorry, there was a technical problem here, I think.
Okay,
sorry. Just, I think, let's start again because we had, I think, a technical issue. Just say, Rob, that I think that I'm not going to make any educated guesses. I think what we try and do and consistently do, as we did last summer, months in advance, is prepare for eventualities. And so that's what we do all of the time in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic increasing. Last summer, for example, dramatically, the number of people who did contact tracing in BC, for example, in advance of the fall. So that's a federal government decision, and it's based on much, I'm sure, many of the same metrics that we look at. But this is something that the premiers and prime ministers are talking about, that the provincial health officer and Dr. Gustafson talks about with her colleagues and gives advice on. But I think the key question that we'll want to see answered is what steps are being taken when those things occur. To ensure that we continue to be safe. And those are the things that I know that the federal government is working on, and of course they must be working on.
And we'll now go to Dr. Gustafson in Vancouver.
Thank you. So the only thing I really have to add to that is just the importance of remembering that the border is long and involves all of Canada, and this is something that we discuss with our federal colleagues, and the decision will take into consideration things like the rate of transmission, rate of infection south of the border, and the level of immunity in Canada overall. Because again, those factors are really important in that decision from a public health perspective.
We have time for one more question. For everyone listening, Dr. Henry and Minister Dix will release a statement this afternoon with the latest information on cases, hospitalizations, and outbreaks, which you can find at news.gov.bc.ca. The final question is Tanya Fletcher, CBC.
Justin, you mentioned the Delta variant of concern is still relatively uncommon in BC, but given that just one dose of the vaccine is believed to provide only 33% protection against it, will second doses be prioritized or fast-tracked for people living in parts of the province where the Delta variant is circulating more? And can you say if there are certain communities or areas of BC where it is more prevalent right now?
Thank you for your question. So again, I don't have community level information about the Delta variant to share with you right now, but what I can say is that second doses are being offered as fast as possible in British Columbia. It is important about these sort of new data that are coming out about variants is to make sure that we put them into context. What the information from the United Kingdom tells us is that it's really, really important for all of us to get our second dose as soon as we become eligible for that second dose. And with respect to the protection from the vaccine, it is important to remember that our primary goal of vaccination is to prevent hospitalizations and deaths. So if there is a decline in protection, and there does appear to be a modest decline in protection after first dose against infection, the next outcome we have to look at is hospitalization. And actually, hospitalizations in the United Kingdom to date have remained quite flat. So we have had a number of variants that emerge, and we have looked at with early data whether it's more transmissible or potentially vaccine is not as effective. What is reassuring is that over time, for all of the variants, we have seen that the vaccines are highly effective against hospitalization and death, which is the most important outcome that we want to prevent, and that a second dose is even more protective for the variant that the United Kingdom is currently monitoring and where it's increasing right now. It's not realistic and not practical to be designing an immunization program to respond to a variant in a particular geographic area, because those things actually vary relatively rapidly, and maybe it may be in one community one day, it may be in another community another way. What we really want to do is make sure that we actually receive, I mean, provide that both the first dose of vaccine and the second dose of vaccine to British Columbia overall as fast as possible.
Tanya, do you have a follow-up?
Please, and for my colleagues, if we could get an answer to these questions in front from Minister Dix, thanks. Dr. Gustafson, you heard today that many people who received AstraZeneca as the first dose are still trying to determine whether to get AZ for the second dose as well or switch to an mRNA vaccine instead. That data from the UK suggests that two doses of AZ are 66% effective against COVID, and two doses of either Pfizer or Moderna are 93% effective. Do you have any data on the effectiveness of one dose of AZ plus one dose of an mRNA?
Thank you for your question. That's a good question, and effectiveness data are not yet available. Effectiveness data require time, where people who received one schedule of vaccine versus another schedule of vaccine have a period of time that's during which there is a potential for being exposed, and we can measure who gets COVID-19 and who doesn't get COVID-19. And that kind of data takes months to acquire. What we do know, and sometimes years, what we do know now from data with the mix and match studies is that it's safe to do that, and that indicators of an immune response, which means that there's measurable antibody that follows that mix and match vaccine, is measurable and is produced through the mixed schedule. So we do have good indicators from this schedule and parallels with other vaccination programs that tell us that either choice is safe to do and will provide you with protection. With the efficacy, the kind of data that you are comparing, that is not yet available for the mix and match studies. And I would actually also be very careful about comparing those between AstraZeneca and Pfizer or Moderna. Because all of those studies were done in different populations at different times with different levels of COVID-19 circulating. What all of these data tell us is that all of these vaccines provide good protection against COVID-19. And I'd like to pass it on to Minister Dix for follow-up.
Just en français pour dire que ces trois vaccins qui sont disponibles en Colombie-Britannique marchent très bien. Il n'y a pas des études actuellement sur cette question d'efficacité pour quelqu'un qui a reçu, par exemple, un type de vaccin pour la première dose et un vaccin différent pour la deuxième dose. On n'a pas encore bien entendu parce qu'on vient d'avoir ces vaccins et on vient d'avoir des deuxièmes doses partout dans le monde. On n'a pas ce genre d'études, pas encore. Mais force est de reconnaître qu'on a trois vaccins qui sont efficaces, trois vaccins qui vous protègent, trois vaccins qui marchent très bien. Et cela est quand on considère le chemin qu'on a marché depuis 18 mois, c'est quelque chose d'extraordinaire. Et il faut continuer tout ensemble d'être vacciné et quoi que le choix en fasse. Tous les choix sont couramment très bons et bon. Et il faut continuer ensemble d'être vaccinés. Et je veux dire à tout le monde qu'il faut aujourd'hui, si on n'est pas inscrit, de faire l'effort d'inscription et puis de se faire vacciner aussitôt que possible. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. We'll see you on Thursday.